Now, you said that the fancy dress ball was happening across the street, so was it in the dining hall at that
point? Oh, yeah,
point?
Yeah. Well, the ones I remember
sometimes
were,
it was at Doraemon's, I know, and sometimes
yeah.
it was at the dining hall.
The Confederate one was the one I remember most clearly, and that was very much at the dining hall.
So would you actually sneak in to fancy dress?
I snuck in to just about everything that was sneakable.
Well, tell me what it was like from that
I have. I actually even had, up until recently, a tape. My brother had given me a little tape recorder, about that big, and I snuck into Dorian's gym when the Four Tops were playing there and recorded the Four Tops. I had that thing until not too long ago.
Tell me about that.
Oh, it was, golly Moses, the little thing. I don't know how much you want to get into this, but you find ways to get in. And I had wonderful friends throughout that entire university, and you know, it was a great place to grow up. I know we'll forget the people who were important to me. There was, and most of them I can't even remember their full names. And, there was a guy named Mr. Bryant who was on the buildings and grounds crew. An old guy named Fred, and it kills me that I can't remember Fred's name. I think they've got a little marker to Fred down at the stadium, who was a took care of the football field down there. Always called me Cozy.
Cozy.
Yeah.
Cozy.
Yeah, but he was a real nice guy. Let's see. I'm trying to remember the. Fellow lives out on 39 across from the Horse Center.
Dr. Duke?
No, this was a buildings and grounds. He was in charge of the crew there. And I'll remember eventually. But just wonderful people. Well, I got to know those people, and particularly in the gym. And so, you know, back doors would be open, and, you know, can I go up and take a look? Yeah, go on, take a look. So I'd run up, and I could get underneath the bandstand. And, you know, of course, everybody would be out there, and I'd be under there with my old tape recorder.
So who else do you remember besides the Four Tops?
Four Tops was the one I remember the most. It was the most hoopla about the Four Tops coming to town. And but I would, you know, the mock conventions, you know, that was an easy, I went to all the mock conventions while I was there.
And some remember important people who came to that?
Well, of course I remember when Truman
came.
Tell
me about that.
Oh gosh, that was a big event. I was six then. That was quite a memorable experience because I was in first grade and they came and I was asked to march in the parade for that. And I would just as soon this not go in because this is kind of corny. But I had a little Confederate uniform that I'd gotten when I was in New Orleans. And there was another little boy in Lexington that had a Confederate uniform. So they wanted us to march with a sign. And carrying a sign, and it was a long parade. I mean, it started up at the high school, went all the way down Main Street, you know, the way down. Well, about halfway through, you know, being 6 years old, carrying this sign, my tongue was just hanging out. And of course, right behind us was the ROTC unit. Trying to, yeah, you know, and there was the head of the ROTC, come on, kids, move on. And we were just running down the street. And I was so tired by the time we finally got to where my mother and father and the Trumans were that, you know, I could barely stand up. But I do remember meeting them. As a matter of fact, My mother had a guest book, and this was, you know, this was very soon after we moved into the Lee house. It's a brand new guest book, and the very first name on that guest book is Harry Truman. So, and we still have that. My mother thought it was so cute. Everybody had been very reverential of Harry Truman's not signing directly below Harry. They'd dropped down a line or two before they'd started signing. And apparently somewhere along the line, one of my nieces, when she was, you know, just able to write, found the guest book and saw everybody's name in there and signed right underneath Harry Truman in good old 6 or 7 year old script.
Oh, that's great.
Mom loves that.
That's a real family treasure.
It really is. It really is.
But, so what was Mock Convention like?
It was every bit as much fun and as wild and crazy as it is right now. I think probably they were a lot more into the true spirit of the convention itself. I recorded on my VCR. This one was on C-SPAN, and I recorded it. And I got to admit, I thoroughly enjoyed every bit that I recorded, particularly given the fact that it seemed like all the speakers really kind of, with the exception of Dan Quayle, understood what they were there for. And so that was a hoot and a holler. But I think back then they were... They applauded and paraded and did everything the way that it was, you know, designed to be. And there probably wasn't quite as much during the speech, interrupting the speech and that kind of stuff.
And back then it was less clear who the nominee was going to be.
That's
right.
Absolutely. That's very much the case.
So did you have more of a sense of backroom stuff?
I think the thrill of being able to make what was obviously a very significant decision was tremendous. I mean, all of my student friends were just absolutely taken into this thing. I mean, they didn't have time for anything. They were making a decision in their mind. It was not just an exercise. And, I was chairman of one of the delegations when I was a student, Utah delegation. And we still had to make a decision back in 1972, the spring of 72. And Kennedy was the nominee, but it was not as foregone a conclusion as I think it was certainly this year with Bob Dole being there. I know Jimmy Carter was the keynote speaker, and Jimmy came to give a serious speech. that was an awakening for him.
Probably a good preparation for what was to come
four years
later.
We went my year. I mean, it was way up into the early morning before we ever came to a final decision. So it was still serious at that point too. And there was so much riding on the decisions of the day and who would lead us and who wouldn't lead us back then. And I think the campus then was very much a Democratic campus. Everybody was, anti-war, anti-establishment, very much a reflection of what other campuses were going through. And so anything that, it was taken, I think, with a good bit of seriousness back then.
So you arrived back before or after the unrest in May of 1970.
Yes.
You came immediately after.
71, right.
So you weren't there to witness any of that.
No, but interestingly enough, it's kind of interesting that there were a couple of my student friends when I was still in Lexington as a young kid, who were very much involved in those protests. And, it was interesting to me because I didn't see that side of them. Everybody, the whole tone of on a college campus, I think, changed back then, and you could, it was easy to feel it when I came back, that it was just a different place. Things that the traditions that were so much a part of Washington and Lee when I was growing up there weren't nearly as important to the students that were there when I got there. And that was sad in a way, but at the same time, it was, you know, the things that people were taking so seriously. They weren't taking tradition or Robert E. Lee as the gentleman as seriously as they were taking the fact that we were fighting a war that, you know, was just horrific, and that there was an establishment that was not seeing what the plague of the age was, and everybody was rebelling against that in one way or another. And I got to admit, for me, my dad told me one time. He said, "You're not going." When I got some grades that he didn't particularly appreciate, he said, "You didn't go back to Lexington to go to school. You went back to go home." And to be back at Washington and Lee, he was very perceptive. I really loved growing up there, and to a degree, that's when I was going back. And you know, it took me a little while to adjust to the fact that, you know, there really was a reason for me to be there, and then I needed to get a handle on that later on. I probably matured a little bit late.
Well, a lot of us matured a little late in those days.
Yep.
It was a time of prolonged adolescence.
Well, it was, and God only knows it. I just think back to the people that were still the Washington and Lee that I remember. You know, people like Dean Gillum and those folks. And it must have been terribly distressing to them to see how the mindset of that generation had changed, and changed so quickly. But again, you know, it's certainly not the fault of that generation. It was, you know, society and reflection of what was going on a much broader level. But interesting transition for me there.
Yeah, I'll bet. So when you came back, this guy you had probably known real well, named Bob Huntley, was now president.
Absolutely, absolutely.
How had you known him before, and then what was it like having him be the president?
I knew him before as someone whom my dad just had highest regard for. He would come and have dinner with us at the house, and
sizing the place up.
You know, they were talking at one level, and I was more concerned about whether I had to eat the beets or not. You know, it was certainly knew Dr. Huntley, but you know, before we left, knew his daughters, who also had gone to Camp Mashwelton, or Camp Lachlan, the girls' part of that, and being one of Lee's good friends, I got to stick around after boys' camp was over, and to help out at the girls' camp. So I knew Martha probably best of all the daughters. Really, once I got to Lexington, Didn't see Dr. Huntley that much. I do remember, as I think I mentioned to you, him coming to, he was a Delta at Washington, Delta Tau Delta, and came to the initiation ceremony that we had. He was there. Jim Farrell, who was also a Delta Tau Delta, was there. And John McDaniel, all of them came for that. And we'd, of course, see him on campus and such, but didn't spend an awful lot of time with him, which I regret now. Having had this recent dinner with him and hearing all the things that were going on, I would have liked to be a little bit closer to it. but that was an interesting age for me, because and I guess a lot of people, I was as low a profile as I could maintain was nice for me at that particular time. And, you know, you grow out of those things, which, knock on wood, I have. But,
well, were you involved with this student? You were a Delt.
I was. Probably not one of the better Delts. As a matter of fact, I dropped out, which is interesting considering the fact that when I came back to Virginia in 87, somehow or other, and I'm still not sure exactly how that happened, I ended up being president of the corporation, and was involved in all of Delta Tau Delta's travails for the last few years, and that's why I'm going back to Lexington next week to finally settle on the assets of the what remains of Delta Tau Delta fraternity. Very, kind of a sad thing. Sad because it, as a fraternity, it meant so much to so many people for so many years, and we tried everything we could to try to salvage it, but just ran into all the challenges that are facing fraternities at any school these days, but certainly in Lexington. But did that, played football until. Had my knee, had some cartilage taken out of my knee, so that was the end of that. Played lacrosse, tried to play varsity lacrosse, but back in those days, you really had to be a good lacrosse player if you were going to play for Washington and Lee. So I played JV again until my knee got hurt. Was the first president of the Washington and Lee Polo Club, which is probably not one of those things that Dr. Huntley would like to be reminded of, or Ferris Hodgkins.
Why is that? I've seen pictures of that, and it must have been pretty short-lived.
It was probably not short enough.
What happened?
It was a great deal of fun, and we had some horses donated to us, and I left when I graduated. Myself and a couple other key people, when we left, the horses did not receive was deemed the appropriate attention. They had been left in the care of some people who became distracted. And so the horses ended up going somewhere else. They were given away. They were donations of people to the university. We actually had a fairly good club going, played a schedule. Played out at the Blue Ridge Riders Ring. Do you know where that is?
Mm-hmm.
Out on Carr's Creek.
Mm-hmm.
Played out there. We also played at Glenmorey Park. I had a wonderful United Way event there. This was all my senior year, and And it was quite successful while we were there. We made several trips up to Charlottesville and played. And some crazy reason, I still have kept all the mementos of that thing. But like I say, I can't throw anything away. Even the stationery we came up with that we used to ask for contribution. But like a lot of clubs, you know, if you don't have a strong group following you who want to pick it up and run with it, it's hard to keep it going.
Now, you say you dropped out of fraternity.
Mm-hmm.
Was that about the time when the house mother started to disappear?
Our house mother was a lady named Mrs. C, and she was there my first and second year. It was tough. That was tough for her, I think. She moved out, moved up on Providence Hill, not too far from Marshall Street, somewhere up there. That was my freshman year, freshman, sophomore. It was rough in the fraternity houses. And
talk
I don't know.
Me. Talk to me about that. It
was decorum was gone. One of my jobs at the fraternity house was I knew I liked to work with wood, and I was the official furniture repairman for the house because it was broken all the time. And you know, again, I think it's I don't want to cast aspersions on individuals. But I think it was symptomatic of the times. I mean, all the fraternity houses, they were all just, how wild can parties get? And I think that was very much to the university's credit that, you know, things really got out of hand. And it, you know, when the Renaissance came along, it was none too soon. It was a, you know, no holds barred type of atmosphere at fraternity parties, and again going back to when I was growing up, Delta Tau Delta in particular had been pretty important to me. Because I had a lot of friends who were there, and I can run down a list of them. But and I was there. I sat on the hill when the old Delta Delta burned down. Mr. Reed Colbert, I don't know if that name rings a bell to you. Mr. Reed had been at our house. He was a black gentleman. Had been at our house for many years. Had then gone to work for the Gaines when the Gaines retired, and then came out of retirement to come back to the Delta House and work. And when that thing burned down, Mr. Reed was just standing out in front of it, just crying. He cared so much for that fraternity, so much for the guys who had gone through that house. And from the time that I left, I went to high school and came back to Mr. Reed, it was really tough on him to see how people were treating the house. With no respect, no recognition of the heritage of the people who had gone before. That was very tough on him. It was tough on the alums who would come back and see the shape of the houses. I mean, the furniture was in just horrendous condition, generally broken. We had a piano that was playing when I first got there, and Lord knows what happened to it, and it was gone by the time I dropped down. And again, not casting aspersions on individuals, you know, that was symptomatic of what was going on, not only at Washington and Lee, but elsewhere. that was just, you know, that was the attitude of the times, that things, tradition, you know, it was, what can we do now to be the wildest and the craziest? And kind of sad, quite frankly. Bob Murray, who is what a wonderful man, but Bob and I were bemoaning what had happened to the Delta House, because it was the newest house on campus at the time, the one house that was really built to be a modern fraternity house. And Bob was just shaking his head one day and said, "It's a shame to see what you guys." And you know, kind of, boy, it hurt me for him to be thinking of me in those, because I'd grown up with Bob, you know, with that chaw on the side of his mouth. I'd grown up with him. I swear to God, they had buckets in the gym. You know, of course, everybody used to spin in. I don't know why, but you know, Bob used them as his own personal spittoons on his tobacco juice. he says, "Shame, see what they've done to that house in that shorter period of time." It was built back in '63, I think, and this was '71. I mean, it was, you know, you swear to God, it was a 40-year-old house. You walk inside of it. It was painted in all of the colors of the day, which was, you know, one of the rooms upstairs had it was actually pretty neat. Had an American flag painted across the whole side of one room. You know, no lights in the fixtures. But again, that's not, I mean, all of those guys have gone on to be, you know, extraordinarily responsible and successful people. So I don't, you know, it's just a symptomatic of the times. And it was an unfortunate time to go through.
Well, I think it's important to get that story, though, because we have to understand why it was so bad that the Renaissance was needed.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you don't understand how bad it was, and the whole idea of fraternity Renaissance seems like an extravagance.
Well, I think John Wilson, and I'm sure if you haven't talked to John, you will talk to John. But, you know, he will tell you frankly, you know, what the need was. John lives here in Blacksburg and comes down, and we've had some interesting conversations.
I bet you have. I'd like to be a fly on the wall for
that. Yeah, he, the Delts, just prior to our renovation, I don't know how much history of individual fraternities you're aware of, but they went through a rather traumatic time there when the university was trying to make a point that it was not going to stand for what had gone before. And at Christmas time, right before the renovation, the Delta House, this was in 91, I believe, was supposed to start, the guys in the house decided they were going to, you know, they didn't see any reason not to go ahead and trash what was left. And so they knocked some holes in the walls and broke up some furniture and everything. I can't, and my role is corporation president, I came in on a Sunday coming back from my place in Augusta County, saw that, and I had told them specifically that I didn't want to see that because it had gone on some of the other houses just prior to the renovation. And they had done it anyway. And so I reported. They ended up on a year and a half suspension. It was an interesting time. The original suspension had been for 5 years, which essentially would have shut down the house. And my role as corporation president, I had been able to muster all those alumni to whom the Delta House still meant an awful lot. Going back, some of the letters I got, and I've still got them, from alumni back in the 30s. That was home for them. I mean, there was one where the guy's parents didn't have parents, and those were his brothers. And, well, all those letters were sent to John Wilson, and the suspension was reduced from 5 years to 18 months. During that 18 months, they agreed to go ahead and renovate the house.
This is the house on Lee Avenue?
Yes.
Right.
right? And as a matter of fact, the people who live next door to us also live out in your community.
Yes, they're my next door neighbors.
Are they? Yeah. Well, those people, I mean, they were wonderful. That was, it's wonderful the place Washington Lee was for me when I was growing up. Came back in the 70s, went through all that mess. And then came back to Virginia again, ready to get involved as an alumnus at Washington Lee. Somehow I ended up as president of a corporation of this house. It's going down the tubes. I'm looking forward to, and I tell Buddy Atkins this, and I tell David Allison this, that one of these days I'm going to find something in Washington Lee that I'm really going to be able to get in there and have a positive role.
Oh, I'm sure they're just delighted to hear you say that.
But that was an interesting time, and of course, after the suspension, you know, with all the fraternities there, it was very difficult to restart the fraternity. So that's going up there next week, I think, to have a final distribution of some type or other of what's left of the kitchen stuff. I mean, when we did it back again, we really did it right. I mean, we gave them every opportunity to make something of it, but at that point, it was too far gone. I just couldn't do it again.
Well, you know, there's one aspect that we haven't talked about. You did come back as a student.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you think we ought to talk about academics a little bit? Experience in the classroom?
Yeah, I'd be glad to. Don't quote anything I said to any of my professors. So. I came back. I was a history major. Walked in the door, was going to be a history major. My dad was a history major. My brother was a history major. I loved it. You know, I mean, it had been a part of my world for as long as I can remember. So had my classes with Dr. Mosier and Dr. Jinks. Dr. Jinks's French Revolution took all those classes. Loved every one of them. The New South from Dr. Mosier. Read his Bird to Bourbonism. Had a wonderful experience with Dr. Mosier. He honored me greatly, or honored my father, actually, who he had a huge amount of respect for. You know, my father was a historian and was the first editor of the Journal of Southern History, for which he was known primarily for by the historians at Washington Lee. Dr. Mosier, knowing that my father and a gentleman, a fellow historian by the name of C. Van Woodward, were very close and had worked on various projects together. And Dr. Mosier had a copy of C. Van Woodward's book, The Origin of the New South, and he presented that to me in honor of his regard for my father. This was his own version of it, and which I thought was wonderful. And actually was rather motivating for me at the time, too, because it came at one of those sessions where Dr. Mosier was reminding me that I needed to pay some more attention to my studies. Dr. Machado took his couple of courses from him, which I enjoyed very much. Let's see. Those are the ones that jump out right now. But loved, in other areas, Sev Duval's English courses were wonderful. And just absolutely adored sitting through his classes. Outside of the real academic, hardcore English and history. Probably my favorite was taking courses from Sam Kozak. And I loved geology. Again, I liked being outside. And his course was the, you know, of course, was called Rocks. And fellow classmates and I would spend hours out walking around the fields in Lexington, picking up rocks and hitting them with little chisels to see what, I love that. And I still am able to identify some of that. It's been great, although and I'm sure most of them would say that I was not the best student. I made up for it later when I decided that I needed to earn a living and went back and got a business degree at Duke and was much better student at that stage of my life than I was earlier. But despite that, even I still have all my books from Washington. I still read frequently. I'll pick them up and go through and feel absolutely, totally embarrassed when I get asked a question that I should know the answer to about one of my history courses that I don't know the answer to. And I will rush home, I know where every one of them is, will pull it out, and can go to where the answer is and come up with it. But Dr. Jenks's classes, he was a wonderful professor. I'm sure you've heard other people say that before. And Dr. Mosier, you got to mention Charlie Turner, who probably one of the most enjoyable classes you could sit through. His classes were infamous at Washington and Lee and for the color that he would bring to the class. And would really get into his lectures in front of us and would act out the roles of the various people, and including Jeb Stuart and Lee's farewell address. Was very touching. We would all, Dr. Turner had a study room downstairs in DuPont Hall, and he had little desks down there, and we would all go down and spend time studying with Dr. Turner sitting at his desk there, so that was done. I took several courses from him. DuPont Hall was an interesting. I took a couple of architecture courses while I was there. One, I took a drafting course from Henry Ravenhorst, which I also thoroughly enjoyed and have used on this place I have up in Augusta County. I've designed all of the renovations I've been doing, utilizing what I learned in his course, which I'm sure would absolutely shock him because I really wasn't very good, and particularly in the math part of it. Really enjoyed also you mentioned Pamela Simpson, her course, and took a course from, name is slipping, a gentleman, not Dr. Ju, but it was a course that we studied European architecture, particularly cathedrals, which fit in very nicely with my history, which I enjoy. And I did mention Dr. Futch. Dr. Futch, who is still a favorite professor, but a favorite person too. He was probably, this thing with the fraternity house going the last 6 years as corporation, it was really a pretty tough time. And he was probably one of the most supportive of the individuals there in Lexington, and would come by and was always encouraging, and I really, really appreciated his support. Took two courses from Dr. Fudge, both of which stand out because, well, I took several courses from him, but two of them in particular stand out. One was the history of Venice, and the other one was the history of Rome, of the papacy. And just absolutely enjoyed it because he was of the would involve the music of the age, and part of the requirement was that you go to the music listening room that we had in McCormick Library at the time and sit there and listen to Vivaldi, and love Vivaldi as a result of that, the art and the everything that was Venice. And one of my great aspirations, and I'm not a traveler, I don't travel well, but I have this one great aspiration. I want to go to Venice in the worst kind of way. And as a result of that class, I mean, it was so thorough, but he painted this mental picture of Venice. There was, it was as though you were there. And there were slides and everything. There are parts of Venice that I will say, I've never been there before. Somebody will show me a picture or a slide, and I know exactly where it is as a result of taking the class. One of the things we had to do is a requirement for the Venetian history course. We had to memorize the names of all the doges, who was the chief executive of Venice, going back 2,000 years, which was one of the games that people would play in order to remember these names. Nobody could do it from absolute memory because
except Fudge,
except Dr. Fudge, and I still remember Doge Foscari. Probably would never forget to, but you know, everybody would go through the games. I forget what they're called, where you would set up little games for yourself with the first letters, mm-hmm. and then you would draw the line of first letters, and that was supposed to help you remember what the name. And that was tough enough, but then you got into papal history, where you also had to go back to, I guess it was Paul. And remember all the popes, and those were tough because so many of them were Leo the Fifth, Leo the Eighth. So that was and those were both spring courses, and this would be last week in May, when Lexington is absolutely the most beautiful place in the world, with the spring smell and I would study up on the old colonnade in the old classrooms, where you could open up the windows on both sides. Absolute torture to try to study up there in May, because you know down at Red Square, of course they got a party going on down there, and the smells of all the spring smells are coming in, and invariably somebody's down there between Lee Chapel and Washington Hall with a frisbee playing. And, you're sitting up there trying to memorize the names of all these popes over 2,000 years. It was torture. It was absolute torture.
But, at the end of this, can I pop in another one real quick? I have two more questions.
That's up to you.